Any final thoughts?
No, thank you so much for having us here just to talk more about Pride in Numbers and the work we're doing. And yeah, we really appreciate it.
That was KBOO's in-depth news reporter, G, speaking with Namisha Jane about Pride in Numbers. You can find out more about Pride in Numbers' current survey at prideinnumbers.org.
You're tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Hi, this is Cecil Prescott. Celeste Carey and I are the co-hosts for More Talk Radio, which airs on KBOO FM 90.7 on Mondays at 8 a.m. For 30 years, Celeste and I have been encouraging and engaging interviews and conversations about politics, social issues, and things which concerns you, your family, and your community. Join us on Mondays at 8 a.m. and be a part of this community radio experience.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from Energy Trust of Oregon, empowering businesses throughout the region with energy-efficient solutions that can help to improve the comfort, safety, and productivity of businesses. More info at energytrust.org. Energy Trust of Oregon.
Sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Instead of me, always seems to know the way. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
city lies ahead of me. Seemed impossible to fail. And when someone else instead of me always seems to know the way, then I look at you and the world's all. And I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
Lovely day, 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 lovely day.
Good evening, and thank you for taking time out of your day to turn on KBOO 90.7 FM, where you're listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio. That's right, we are on KBOO on Wednesday, April 1st, 2026. It's just a little after 6 p.m., and again, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to turn that channel to 90.7 FM in Portland. Or if you're listening online or via our app online, you're at kboo.fm/listen-live. So you've gone to the website and you click that listen live button. Thank you for taking time to download our app out of your Apple Store or your Chrome Store, your Google Store. It's a cool little app. You just type in KBOO in the store and it'll pop right up. And you download that and you can listen. We have shows on demand. You just go to the show that you want and click play. You can listen live. You can also, this is so cool, you can donate to KBOO straight through that app. You just hit the donate button like you can on the website. So that's a quick plug for fundraising. My name is Sherry, and I'm the host of PDX Progressive Talk Radio. It's been a long day. News is always so heavy, especially in this era. This show was recorded earlier in the week. I'm going to share some interviews that I've had. One, if you heard last month, was my interview with John Wazowski. He is running for a seat in District 38 over in Lake Oswego, and his area covers part of the south waterfront where the ICE facility is. So I had a talk with him about that, and yes, I did reach out to the incumbent for that seat, and we are planning on having an interview at some point in April. So that'll be part of my next show in May. The beginning of May. So I'll be filling you in a little bit more about that if you follow me on Facebook. I talk a lot about this kind of stuff there. I also had the awesome opportunity to talk with the city of Portland's one of our most prolific supporters of equity and inclusion. Her name is Judith Morey, and she just took the position of the City of Portland's interim director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and my talk with her was simply a joy. So we're going to be spending a good portion of this show on that interview. It was wonderful. And then I'm going to put in a couple of songs. I decided over the past couple of weeks that Moses's favorite song should be our intro song, so you have heard that already, and you can just enjoy that every time this show comes on. That was for Moses. We are coming up on the one-year anniversary. April 23rd of 2025 was the morning that Moses passed away, and it's been an adjustment. It really has, and I've had to take the show back monthly, so I did want to speak on that really quick. For those who miss our live shows in the morning, I had to change my schedule for work, so this opportunity presented itself, and I took it. If you are, in angst over not being able to listen to the show, I feel you, and thank you. I appreciate the support. Even if you're not, that's okay. If you like to interact with the host live, I understand that's an opportunity in the station, but there are other ways to do this. I can set up programs that allow you still to call in, and you'll be recorded on this show. And so I'm working on putting something together that might help us organize around that. And then you could still be heard and have your questions heard and answered and heard on the show. It's just I won't always have a call-in show in the evening. I want to focus more on the music and on the interviews that I have during the week, and then communications with you, my community, that we might have during the month. That would be a wonderful thing to consider, because I do record most of these, and I plan on continuing in that direction. So onward, in the news. It is April 1st, so it's April Fool's Day. This is no joke. Over the weekend, there were 8 million people approximately across the United States who came together in celebration of No Kings. There were No Kings. There were 3,200 No Kings rallies across the country. And what a way to show that the current infrastructure of government that we currently exist under is not who we are, and we're standing up and saying something about it. 8 million of us. Unfortunately, my new job means I work weekends, so I was not able to attend at this event, but I watched it. I looked for all the news I could and have been listening to different reports, both from my community neighbors, people I follow, and the news about how well these protests really went and how much the Trump administration has staved off talking about them. Remember last time, and there's been some discussion around this that I've thought was interesting. So last time at the last event, which I did get to go to, leading up to that, in the weeks leading up to that protest, the Trump administration and Congress and, people in Congress, the Republicans, were beating their thumbs, saying how these were going to be super violent events and teasing about them, making jokes of it, and trying to dissuade people from going, basically. And 7 million people showed up. So they said, oh boy, they're seeing it. Because this time they didn't say anything. They just ignored it and didn't put it into their ecosystems, right? So people who are not part of a community that wants a better America don't listen to it, right? They didn't hear about it. What they did hear about on public free TV is 8 million people showed up. Another additional million people from the last one showed up at this event, even after the Republicans didn't say anything. I think there is tons of things to be said about that. And now Trump's Gallup issued a poll a couple days ago, I guess over the weekend. His approval rating at this point is still way too high. Apparently it's at 36%. And I'm beside myself because I can't even believe that 36% of this nation are still okay with American citizens being deported, with teachers and people who prepare our food and do all of these things, and honest workers are being absconded and deported, right? And they're scooping up American people in between. And at some point, I think it's calmed down a little now. I haven't heard so much about it. But at one point, people were showing their green cards and the ICE people are like, no, that doesn't mean anything anymore. And taking them, right? So, and then they wonder why the Democrats don't want to fund them and are saying no, because if you don't want to mind rules, you're okay closing down the government, Republicans, because you don't want to mind rules. You don't want us to come up with requirements for your militia out there who's supposed to be regulated under the Constitution, the Second Amendment. They aren't regulated. They're going out and terrorizing people. And you think we're going to pay for it? You already got paid for it in the bill, the big, beautiful, ugly bill, right? $75 billion. No, we're not giving you any more. The Republicans shut down the government because they thought their band of goons is worth another couple hundred billion dollars. In fact, I heard tonight on NBC, I think it was NBC News, that in one of the news reports, and I need to get more information on this, but I heard on the news report that the Republicans are trying to find, well, mostly probably Trump, is trying to find a fraud and waste abuse in the healthcare system so they can get a couple hundred billion to send to this illegal war in Iran. It's ridiculous. It's really, and on days like this, I get a little annoyed that Moses passed away, because we used to talk about these things, right? He was more level-headed, but he's more centrist than I am. And he's a bit more level-headed than I was. So there are days I wish he was here, well, most of the time, to talk about these things with, right? Because for me, sending a couple hundred extra billion dollars for an illegal war that didn't need to happen is beyond ridiculous. I am a taxpayer. I should not have to be responsible for somebody trying to distract the American public from his dirty deeds. So I'm hoping that these protests have the impact of our future that we wish to have. Voting in 2026 is literally, we hear it every year, but it is literally life or death this year. It really is. We need to. I'm hearing some slide about the Senate, some people are saying they want the Senate to remain in Republicans' hands. Who might that be? Because they know the House is gone. You've got people leaving early, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and you've got others who have already stated that they're retiring because they're done with all of this garbage. So there's that. And these Republicans want to maintain the Senate. I'm sorry, but we have given them, you guys, the people who are Republicans, who are quote unquote conservative. I don't know that you'd know what the definition of that word is, but you call yourself conservative. I cannot even believe that you are quiet. You are quiet with what we're having to deal with regarding where our tax dollars are going. I'm sorry, but it is not conservative to take away from maintaining, trying to maintain a healthy, productive workforce for a fever dream in a third world, in a Far East nation. It's dumb. And that is not conservative by any stretch of the imagination. Most of your ideology isn't conservative, but, you know, who am I? So we apparently went into this quote-unquote war with Iran. I called an illegal occupation from the United States, who believe now that they are the America's bullies, and who was the last bully to take over a Middle Eastern nation for no reason. Who was that? Another Republican. Anyway, at least he didn't, when he was appointed the crown, when he was appointed the seat at the Resolute desk, he didn't promise no wars, right? He was too busy trying to get used to listening to Cheney instead of Daddy. So that's Republicans. These are your standard bearers. Seriously. We are apparently in a war with Iran for no reason other than the Epstein files, from what I can tell. That's not an accusation. That's not a defamation of any kind. That is just my observation. Congress is out for 2 weeks on spring break as of today. But Republicans say that they are open to funding this abomination, even though it's an illegal excursion. So all I can say to that one is, what's new? And so I'll probably get in trouble for the things that I've said, and, you know, okay, they've got to be said. I've been really quiet over the past months, almost 2 years, a year and a half that he's held down the chair, because I lost a lot of friends and a lot of family, and many people that I'd known for many years because of my stand against Trump during his first term. And so I've been quiet about it, but I'm done, because we are not in any way getting any better anytime soon, so who really cares what I have to say? I'm going to move this forward. We're going to go into the talk that I had with the City of Portland's new interim director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. And then after that, I'll play a song and the portions of the interview I had with Woz for Oregon in District 38 at the end. And I hope you enjoy the show. Thank you for listening to me ramble. And I look forward to what's going to happen in the future. Oh, and one more thing. KBOO Community Radio is volunteer powered. And thanks to the closure of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, we've lost a significant source of income. So if you could find it in your heart to please send us a couple of bucks. That would be great. You can do it in a plethora of ways online at, we were talking about earlier, where you could listen. Well, next to that listen button is a donate button at kboo.org. You can see that it's right at the top. And then on the app is the same thing. You open up our app, the KBOO app, and there's a little button there too where you can click on it and it takes you to where you could donate. And we'd really appreciate it. You can also send us a check. I know lots of you are leery of the electronics, so we do take paper. You can send that check to KBOO, KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, and the zip code is 97214, I believe. Let me look that up real quick. I think that's what it is. Zip code for KBOO. Let's see what it gives me. 97214. So if you want to send a check, you can do that by writing KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And I really appreciate all of your help. We all do, because without you, we couldn't bring you the valuable shows and experiences that we are able to with your support. Make it a great night and enjoy the show. You're listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio. It's April 1st on KBOO Community Radio at 90.7 FM in Portland. I will not have enough time in this show to play both interviews. So the interview that we are joining preemptively is my interview with the City of Portland's Interim Director of Equity and Human Rights, Judith Maury. It was a lovely interview, and I do apologize. Some of the audio when I'm asking questions isn't great. For some reason, the software didn't catch my mic as well as I would have liked. And I will not be playing the WAS for Oregon interview during this set. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have enjoyed the show so far.
I actually became a mediator, which I really dearly love doing, and learned a tremendous amount about how to have cultural humility in any kind of work, right? And particularly as a white woman. And as I continued to go, things happened in my life. I had friends who had children who were adopted who were of color, and there were a lot of racist skinheads moving into our neighborhood. I live in the same neighborhood where Mulugaitis Raw was murdered, and it was during a time that a bunch of, you know, the racist skinheads were moving in. Some friends had had rented a house like kitty corner to her house and was concerned. So we ended up starting something called the Anti-Bigotry Coalition. And we just did whatever we could figure out to do. We actually did have a march from Hawthorne down to the city council, down to City Hall, to talk about our concern about the racist skinhead presence. And that generated into doing that. And as I mediated, I ended up mediating in a lot of situations, Sherry, that were between white folks and people of color in larger ways. I was at the mediation center that the city had that then spun off with Resolutions Northwest, but we did neighbor to neighbor mediation. I would hear repeatedly phone calls from new neighbors into Northeast who would say, "I'm not racist, I love diversity, but they." I was hearing from folks from the community, "What has happened here? All of a sudden there's all these coffee houses with white men with big dogs sitting at the corner. All of a sudden, every black church is sort of feels under attack by neighbors for noise, for parking, et cetera." It was really a thing. So, John Kanda at that time was the director of the Northeast Coalition office, and John grew up African-American man who grew up here, and we began to talk about what was happening, what people did and didn't understand, what kind of things could we do to help illuminate what was happening. And I had just fallen in love with restorative justice and became very interested in how do we use the principles of restorative justice outside of the carceral system so that we can look at how does it apply to our civic life together? How can we think about the idea of harm with a process that leads to repair? So I worked on a process, we called it the restorative listening process on gentrification. We did a few things. We asked black folks from the community if they'd be willing to come and answer restorative justice questions like, what's happened, who's been harmed, how have they been harmed, and what can we do about the harm? And the first half was all black voices. It was John facilitating. Later, we were really fortunate to have Celeste Carey come in and be a partner in the group. We would listened to stories. I had a lot of Black friends tell me that they were tired of telling white people their story and not being believed. So it kind of became clear to me that white people need to not talk in the beginning of this conversation. Then we'd go downstairs. We always held these in Black churches. And we would have dialogue, and we would invite the speakers and say, we're so grateful for you telling your story. You are welcome to join us if you want to, but if you don't feel up to it, that's fine. Because we really wanted a space where people could ask the kind of questions that they might be uncomfortable, afraid to ask, you know? Because I think a lot of us, I know that I feel sometimes it's overestimated what white people could see or get at that time. It wasn't really all over the place, right? We weren't taught in school. A lot of us grew up in very segregated ways. So the thing that also happened was I left Resolutions Northwest and I was invited to come to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement at the city to work on internal conflict processes for working with the community. And I said, well, I'm doing this project. I might be controversial. I hope it's fine. And my boss said, yeah, make it a part of your work plan. So we did. And we did it for 5 years. You know, it ended up on the front page of the New York Times, and we had never called the press. And I only add that to say the world was so hungry for the conversation. So I know I'm making this very long. Sorry, it feels like it's been a long way to get here. Eventually, after 5 years at the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, the Office of Equity and Human Rights was started, and I was assigned to be in the office. You know, I sort of had a broad, I had done a lot of mediation for very complex, multi-party, high-stake things like urban renewal areas and, you know, lots of things like that. So I knew policy. I was comfortable talking about race. So it's been really my honor to be there for the 14 years. I'm the last one standing from the very original staff. And I have been the interim deputy director for the last 2 years. And when my boss, our interim director, left, then I had the opportunity to serve in this capacity to be the director.
That is amazing. Congratulations. Wow. What a story.
Thank you. That's yeah, it's been quite a journey. Now that I look back, it's interesting how it all connects.
So I was curious, Judith, you've often said that equity should be part of the city's DNA rather than a veneer. In the past 20 years here, what has been the most difficult policy gear to shift from individual acts of goodwill into binding institutional processes that survive through leadership changes?
Thank you. Happy to answer that question. Got to give credit to that quote to one of the other directors that has been in through the time. So I think, obviously, there's a couple. One of the things is making a very big shift in terms of how we see this issue. Moving from sort of a diversity inclusion model, which I think we know has struggled around, you know, just performative things. And I think many times people mean well, but they just, it's hard to keep, this is number one, it's hard to keep a sustained commitment from leadership. Something new comes along, some new crisis comes along. So it's hard to keep it as that piece. It's also hard for people to understand. So for the city of Portland, our job is to serve everyone well. We know through data and story and a lot of other ways that has not historically happened. And so we need to know our communities to serve them well. And we need to really look at how do we help everyone in the community do well by seeing where is everybody in relationship to that outcome? And how can we target the strategies to bring everybody up, right? Because people, how they're situated, they're going to have different needs and different things. So I think keeping the sustained, you know, commitment has been hard. I will tell you something that baffles me, and I've certainly said it enough in the city that I don't, some people in leadership have said they still don't understand equity, and I just don't think it's rocket science. So I'm still a little baffled by that. And I think that, so that's a piece. And just the whole idea of how do we change things? You know, one of the things I would notice is, you know, we'd come in to something, an issue in the community, and you would hear on one side from the institution, well, you can't expect us to fix, the city can't do everything, right? Also, the city liked to hold on to the solution, you know? So it's, we can't fix everything, but we want to be in charge of how everything is fixed. Sure. And there was this assumption that it was on the community to change. And, you know, we've heard all those conversations, the pull your pants up, all of this. If you really understand systemic racism, you understand that people are situated in ways that make it extremely difficult to survive, let alone thrive under these circumstances.
The connections. Everybody tries to say, oh, we all have the same opportunities. No, we don't. But no, we don't. Even, you know, getting everybody in their class structure does not have the same opportunities.
Exactly. And we really are looking, I mean, we look at LGBTQAI2+ issues, we look at disability issues, and our disability program in our office is focused on Title II, which is accessible city, right? So every building we have needs to be accessible, parks need to be accessible. There's a lot of work to do, but it is an ongoing process. We have brilliant people in our team who lead conversations and lead work around making sure that we know what needs to be done, that those things get done. So, and you're right. I mean, the same thing with class, right? We have yep. The same kind of things. And I think it's hard for people to grasp just how socially constructed some of this is, you know? I think we like to think we're really the captains of our own ship and our own destiny. Actually, you know, there's implicit bias, there's environmental, I mean, there's so many things that impact us, how we see the world and what becomes reality. So I really think that those pieces make it hard to move the work forward. And, you know, even for a lot of people who have worked in, you know, diversity and equity or diversity and inclusion kind of spaces, have had to learn a lot to figure out what does it actually mean? What do we do that impacts the outcome in community? And that's what it's about. We want to make sure everything we do is done equitably. We want people to stop and think, is this going to work for everybody? And how do we know? Do we have people at the table? Are we including people? You know, and there is, I think, a foundational sort of approach that's really around progressive social justice, understanding of what makes change. And it can be as simple as who's at the table, who deserves to get a voice in what happens to the place they live and to the experience they have.
Everybody has their own agenda, though, and that's a difficult thing to navigate around. So you pivoted the conversation from inclusion toward belonging in the civic square. Given the current 2026 federal environment and the recent executive orders regarding grant compliance, how do you protect the sense of belonging for marginalized Portlanders while navigating these new legal restrictions on protected class language? And that's significant.
It's really significant. And I will say that I think everyone in this field of work has been just, you know, really working hard to know how to do that. I am a huge fan of the Othering and Belonging Institute at Berkeley. John Powell leads that work. He's brilliant, got a brilliant legal mind, just amazing. And so I've been digging deeply in the last 8 years into the question of how do we have a world where everyone is within the circle of human concern? How do we create belonging? How do we create othering? How do we build bridges between each other? And that really kind of pivots to the last question for a second to say that I think we have a very individualistic culture, and it's become more so, I believe. And that is one of the barriers. There are cultures that are much more built around the good of the whole. So as you said, we all have our agendas. And I personally hope that our shared agenda can be human, animal, such a life of, survival. And also understanding, I watch all the technology, I watch all the progress we make, and I truly believe that so much of that could be used for our good, right? And it can be very hard right now to believe in this, but we're totally able to provide city services without violating Title VI, or without, we do that upholding Title VI, so I'm very proud of the city in their clarity about what they will stand for. I mean, obviously right now we have the sanctuary city, we have just plenty of things that are upsetting certain people. and our city attorneys have been fantastic about for sure, lawsuits and defending us. Yeah. I hope that helps with the answer. With the belonging, part of it for me is just, really staying in touch, making sure you see people. I think the problem, I often think we need to see, hear, and serve people in my job, And, we're working on sanctuary city issues a lot, recognizing that Latinx folks are not the only folks that are at risk in this community from ICE. Recognizing we have a Somali community here. Recognizing we have a Haitian community. We have communities that are being, excluded and are under threat. And so making sure from my perspective that all those communities are being seen. So as we look at this, we recognize that it's not just Spanish speaking folks who carry the greatest risk, right? So how do we make sure that everything we do provides access to the protections we're trying to provide, in their language, in the most appropriate sort of cultural ways we can do that?
I've noticed that libraries are really, really good about offering translation, about employing people who speak multiple different languages, not just Spanish, but they speak the Farsi and Russian and all sorts of different languages. Yeah. The libraries are really, really good about that. So
I agree.
I'm going to ask you one final question, and because you have a friend wanting your attention. We see ears going back and forth now and then. That's awesome.
Oh, is she behind this part of the chair?
So with the city now requiring disparity studies to legally support any equity-focused initiatives, how is your office evolving its data collection? Are we moving toward a model where lived experience and quantitative data are finally given equal weight in the city council decisions?
Thank you for the question. Our data work has been really strong for over a decade now. We have some really smart data folks who are very grounded in equity. Our Title VI program is very grounded in equity and looking at that. We have a language access program that has really also been strong. Collectively, I think the city has done a tremendous job, both with quantitative and qualitative data. When I first started working there, and we would say, how are you doing with Water Bureau, like how do you know how people are taking advantage of, know to take advantage of their opportunity to have their costs lowered if they're low income? And the fact was nobody was collecting demographic data that had, that was disaggregated by race and ability and those kind of things. So I am not a data nerd. I am in awe of people who are. And what I know is that we just have had a, I think, very robust, you know, engagement in that level. And I think we certainly want to be sure that any data that goes before City Council and their decision making includes all of those sources.
Fantastic. Upon leaving, Judith, do you have any final statements that you'd like to make regarding the future of your office and the City of Portland?
Yes. Thank you for that opportunity. I believe in this work, you know, it's to my toes. And I think this is a difficult time. And from my own personal opinion, I sometimes wonder, you know, is it that our systems have just been so baked in to an inequitable outcome that we can't just put our finger in the dike or remove, you know, a barrier here and expect it to really make it that kind of permanent difference? And I think a lot of those institutions are kind of crumbling, and it's painful. And of course, the people who are hurt are always those who are most, you know, most marginalized. But I also believe that we're doing the right thing. I love Portland. I feel like when I see what they've been able to do in Minnesota and in Minneapolis, the way in which community came together and talked about doing community care and self-defense, which really was about making sure everyone understood the horror of having community members taken out of our communities. So I hope, first of all, we will all be willing to be more curious about options other than the ones we've convinced ourselves are the right ones, and more willing to take care of each other. I really try anytime I'm around other people to just come at it with the greatest level of kindness I can, because I think that's the first place to bridge, right? To say hello at the grocery store, I know that sounds really simplistic, but I'm a big believer in connecting to other human beings at that level.
Actually, bring up a huge point. I live in Molalla. And while we have a large Hispanic community, when Trump was in office the first time, you could see the fear in these people's faces. And I'm like, you're our neighbor. So I always was smiling at them and saying hi and letting them know I'm a safe place. Right?
That's beautiful. That's beautiful, Sherry. And I think we can all think about, you know, making sure we're supporting the business owners we know who have, you know, ethnic restaurants, carts that are, a lot of people are, you know, too afraid to get out to work. And so looking for opportunities, there's a lot of great organizations that can help guide us in what people need most and making sure that we're there to exactly say that thing. You're my neighbor.
Maury, thank you so much for sharing some time with me today. Would like to know where we can find more information about how we can all be more inclusive and understand equity better.
Great. Well, we have a website at the city, which is portlandoregon.gov and then /equity. But I will say, I think actually it's changing, like, you know, technology, everything's changing. But if you go to the city website and you look at the Bureau for Equity, our webpage is there. That will give you some guidance. I really recommend people check out the Othering and Belonging Institute webpage at Berkeley. If you Google Othering Belonging or whatever your search engine is, you can find that. And they have free classes on all kinds of things. They have wonderful ways to engage and to learn more about these things. They talk about bridging and breaking. And I really look forward to eventually having another conversation happen in the community where we come together and look at how we can grow together across issues that appear to have a huge divide.
Let's count on us having another conversation in the future. I'd like to learn more about how your programs are developing.
I'd love to, Sherry. Thank you. And thanks for having me.
Thank you, Judith. I'll have some content to you soon.
Sounds great. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. My name is Sherry and I'm the host, and I want to thank you so much for your support and your continuing to listen. If you wish to reach out to me, you can email me at pdx.progressivetv@gmail.com. Again, the email is pdx.progressivetv@gmail.com. If you want to follow on social, I'm on Facebook at S. Meredith. Just look up Sherry Meredith. Or you can look up Progressive Radio Podcast on TikTok, it's Progressive Radio Podcast, and on Blue Sky, it's PDX Progressive Talk Radio. And those are all the ways you can contact me. Thank you for listening, and I will be back the first Wednesday in May for the May show, and I hope to talk with you before then. Take care, and thank you.
Of each month at 6, 10 a.m. on KBOO. I'm diving into the heart of the Rose City. We're talking local government, the push for true equity, and the sticky truths about everything from housing to the economy. We're professional enough to know the issues, but quirky enough to know that a little wit goes a long way when you're fighting for the common good. We're looking for compromise, representation, and maybe just a little less drama. Salem, whether you're a lifelong activist or just someone who thinks our city deserves better than me, pull up a chair,
join the conversation,
because accountability isn't just a buy, it's a policy, only on 97 FM, KBOO, community power, volunteer driven, and slightly caffeinated. Thank you for
out there. This is Jello Biafra. If you're tired of the OCA, Walt Disney, Westinghouse, General Electric, and police departments telling you what you should listen to, stay tuned in to KBOO Portland, listener-sponsored, non-commercial community radio.